Welcome to this Wednesday edition of the My Daily Ag Life News Report. I'm Lori Boyer in for Sabrina Halverson. Today is Walnut Wednesday. So not only are we featuring walnut information to get us started, we're also featuring information, as I mentioned, we also continue information from our series that we started yesterday on the annual Tree Nut Conference that was held last week in Tulare. Taylor Chalstrom has the report.
Hi, this is Taylor with My Ag Life. Last week was the California Tree Nut Conference in Tulare, and I spoke with Pam Gravier, Senior Marketing Director International with the California Walnut Board and Commission. Gravier was participating on the Tree Nut Leadership Panel in place of Executive Director and CEO Michelle Connolly, and she discussed where the walnut industry is headed. But first, a little bit about the Walnut Board and Commission.
I handle all the international marketing for the California Walnut Commission. The board is responsible for domestic. So on the commission side is where we do all the international. And so the California Walnut Board, we're two entities in the same building with the same staff, is responsible for domestic marketing, demand creation here at home, and also production research, where on the commission side, we do health research and we do international marketing to create demand everywhere except here at home.
Gravier explained how issues with world trade and other regulations have affected the walnut industry recently.
Yeah, trade has been challenging the last couple of years. There's been a variety of actions that have been taken where nuts in general are hit with retaliatory tariffs or increased tariffs. But in walnut's perspective, we're grown in many, many countries around the world, mm-hmm. and some countries try to protect their own growing region. Everyone hears about India in particular.
Yeah.
And so the tariff in India is 100%.
Wow.
And that's across any country that's trying to send their walnuts to India. It's not just a U.S. issue. And that was really designed to protect their own walnut industry. But then we got hit with a retaliatory tariff. So we've had a variety of these issues. And then there's been a real significant movement in trying to address, you know, climate and the environment. And we see that in changes in regulations for the different pesticides and herbicides that we need to use for our crops or that we need to use for fumigants so that another country will accept them. So it's challenging on the regulatory issue. But at the same time, it offers great opportunities for new innovation.
The California Walnut Board and Commission works with different United States entities to bring awareness to these issues and overcome them.
We work with USDA and the United States Trade Representative, known as USTR, as well as the Foreign Agricultural Service that's located in embassies around the globe, in one, making them aware of how these changes are affecting our growers, how it's detrimental to their livelihoods. And then offering, you know, this is what the industry would like. You know, we want fair and equitable access. That doesn't necessarily mean we want no tariff. It means fair. It has to be fair for all parties involved. Sometimes those things happen quickly, but more often than not, it takes a lot of time for governments to act and react.
Yes.
And so then you throw in the mix, we just are, you know, still in a pandemic. And so that just kind of slowed things down even more. So that the key is that we're constantly active, we're making them aware, we're constantly bringing it back up to their attention so that we're, you know, not forgotten about. And then when trade negotiations or tariff reduction discussions start to happen again, we're at the table.
Gravier also discussed work the Walnut Board and Commission participate in on the ag tech front and how innovation is key to the success of the industry moving forward.
We've been investing in production research for over 50 years.
Yeah.
And it's evolved over time into, you know, soil health, tree health, a lot of research, new varieties. And the new varieties are both, earlier harvest varieties that are meeting consumers' needs today. Consumers want lighter, and some of the older varieties just can't deliver that. So it's finding where's that sweet spot of what the crop should be, and also not having it all come into harvest all at the same time. That's really difficult for our handlers to handle. You know, from a grower's perspective, the crop's ready, we harvest it, but the handler has to handle it through the system. So that's a big piece of it. And then as, you know, these diseases and pests that we share in common with some other tree crops, some we don't, it's finding new ways of maybe not necessarily killing the pest, but it's mitigating the damage that the pest does.
Yes.
And those new technologies could be, as you see, are used in pheromone disruption and things like that. And there's things that people haven't even thought of yet, and they're trying to find those answers. The last piece is on, you know, the byproduct, which is the shell and the hull. What happens to that? We don't eat them. So, you know, what can we do with that? So we've got, I think, three different projects in research right now in, you know, how can we use the shells maybe as a hardener in cement? Or how can we use the hulls as a feed for a certain type of animal?
Okay.
Which almonds does already with cattle. We can't feed walnut hulls to cattle.
Why is that, actually?
It has to do with the composition of what's in it. I don't know if it upsets their stomach or it's toxic to them. I don't know the technical on that.
Well, they have four stomachs, so one of them is bound to...
Yeah, but it's something that they don't like
and
probably isn't good for them. But for other, you know, domesticated animals that are used, such as poultry or something... It may be perfectly fine, so we're doing the research on that.
In terms of marketing, the Walnut Board and Commission does extensive work to bring awareness to walnuts and the industry.
We're very fortunate in about half of our funding for export marketing comes from the USDA's Market Access Program. Okay. So we have to apply for that every year. It's a grant program, so you have to have a good case for why you need the money, how you're going to use the money, and then you have to prove what you did with it. So we have a long history of being very successful with that. Overall budget, I honestly don't know the percentage splits with domestic and everything, but it's comparable to what the other nut commodities are doing. But with the ability to use USDA grant programs, it extends our grower assessments, you know, exponentially, and we can do things that we couldn't do with industry funds alone. It's been extremely beneficial in opening up new markets and expanding existing markets over, you know, a number of years.
Back with more information from the annual Tree Nut Conference and Taylor Chalstrom right after this.
This segment was sponsored by the California Walnut Board.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcast, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
As mentioned, our report series continues from the annual Tree Nut Conference that was held last week in Tulare. Taylor Chalstrom was on hand at that event. He talks in this report about pressure bombs.
Ryan Kaplan of Pressure Bomb Express was also present at the conference, and he participated in the irrigation panel. Here is what Kaplan spoke about on that panel.
The panel was really fun. It started with Ken Shackle talking about irrigation automation and some of the new things that are coming. Isaiah talked a little bit as well, and then I was able to talk to growers about Pressure Bomb Express, the app, and what it is and how it streamlines pressure bombing for growers, and then field questions from growers regarding pressure bombing and pressure bombing different varieties, different rootstocks, what's the differences there, things like that.
Ken Shackle, professor of pomology at UC Davis, was also on the irrigation panel, and when I spoke to him in a separate interview, he explained how pressure bombs will likely never fully go away as new monitoring technologies are developed. Kaplan agreed.
Yeah, he's right. Pressure bombs have been around for 30 years, and they're really the gold standard. They've been tested and trialed by the UC unlike any other tool, so very rigorously tested. And it allows growers to really fine-tune in and keep their trees in those perfect irrigation conditions. And that's what we do with Pressure Bomb Express, is try to make an old trusty tool that may be a little bit misunderstood a lot easier to use, so growers can get all the value out of a pressure bomb, which can be a lot less expensive than some of these new emerging technologies, and give you just as good, if not better, information. So that's what we try and do.
While pressure bombs have been around for decades, some within the industry are still unaware of their function or have reservations about them. Kaplan explained some of these reservations and how he works with growers to educate them about pressure bombs.
There's a couple things that hold growers back from pressure bombing that I always hear. The first one is they think it's labor intensive, and it is more labor intensive than some of the automated things, but really, what we like to do at Pressure Bomb Express when we work with the grower is sit down in the springtime and build a solid game plan of how are we going to use this data and how can we build a plan for them based on their soils and their trees and irrigation schedules to where they're pressure bombing the least amount possible to get the best information and keep those trees where they need to be. And with doing so, they're able to maximize nut sizing, nut filling, quality, and save water in some cases. So I think it's a little bit misunderstood in the way that it seems like it's very labor intensive. It is, but it can be done better if growers know how to make a solid game plan from the start. I usually talk to growers and tell them if you're going to use it as little as possible, we need to at least use the pressure bomb once a week, and knowing when to take those readings. So when you take your pressure bomb readings, it's key to try and take it the day before you're going to irrigate. Okay. And by doing so, we're able to see how stressed are the trees at that point, and then look at what our upcoming irrigation schedule is going to be and adjust it based on if the trees are stressed or if they're wet. And by doing that, every week we're doing this kind of adding and subtracting an hour here, an hour there, and keeping the trees in those perfect zones at individual growth stages through the year to have success.
As with all technologies, pressure bombs can present obstacles to growers. Kaplan cited some of these obstacles and innovations that have been able to overcome these.
What I noticed as a grower myself when I first started using a pressure bomb was how powerful the tool is, how great information it gives. But if you start to collect multiple readings on different commodities a day, it can end up being a lot of data. So you're writing it all down, you're trying. Another thing growers sometimes skip is baseline adjustments, which are super, super critical when looking at pressure bomb data. And our app does that for them as they input data into the app. But training growers on taking that into account, you input it into the app will crunch all the numbers and spit out a report at the end of the day that allows the growers to scan down, see which fields are in the sweet spot, which ones are stressed or wet, and adjust the schedule instantly. So it takes a tool that used to be a little slower, and I had some growers that it would take a couple days for an intern in the office to crunch the numbers for them and give it to them, when really a pressure bomb is a snapshot in time tool that tells you if your trees are stressed or not, and then you need to act on it. So Pressure Bomb Express takes that data, crunches it, and gives you a report instantly for you to take action on.
Kaplan clarified that the Pressure Bomb app doesn't connect directly to the pressure bomb, and growers still need to enter the field with the pressure bomb and a cell phone or tablet.
So you still go out physically with your pressure bomb into the orchard, collect manual readings, but as you go, or you, your employee, or intern go along, they sit and they input the data into the app and save it as they go. Then at the end of the day, they upload it when they have service, and that crunches all the numbers, gives a report, starts graphing the data, and gives the manager the ability to instantly look at all of their fields, look at ET information, soil information, and pressure bomb information, all on the same platform, and make educated decisions.
As new automated technologies enter the market, Kaplan has great faith in the pressure bomb to continue delivering results to growers.
You know, there's some interesting technology coming out, automated, that's going to be really, really interesting. I think pressure bombs are never going to go away. And pairing it with Pressure Bomb Express makes the Pressure Bomb even more valuable and comparable to those new tools at a fraction of the cost. So these new technologies are very expensive per acre, whereas if you crunch the numbers on a good pressure bombing program, buying a pressure bomb, buying a tablet, getting Pressure Bomb Express, the app, having an employee do it for you, it breaks down to about $7 per acre, which is by far the cheapest irrigation management tool you can get right now, and it gives you the gold standard data. So literally the data that all these other companies are founding their samples and their results on is all Pressure Bomb stemwater potential data. So Pressure Bomb Express makes that easy and very, very affordable. So the app is around $1 to $2 per acre annual subscription, very affordable. We try to keep it that way so growers can use it. Large scale and small scale growers can use it and have success. The app is web-based, so you can do it on Android or Apple devices, iPads, tablets, anything that you can take out into the orchard. It's developed so you don't need cell service, so you can go out into the field with a tablet that doesn't have cellular connection, save all the data as you go, and then once you have a Wi-Fi connection, you can push it to the cloud, or you can use a cell device and do it right when you have service.
The Pressure Bomb app doesn't need cell service to operate, a concern for many in rural areas. Once information from the Pressure Bomb is inputted and calculated through the app, it's pushed into a cloud for easy access.
Everything goes from the phone, gets pushed to the cloud, goes directly to your account where you can view all of your Pressure Bomb data, irrigation information, ET info, everything is on there in one place, so the grower's not having to click around to a bunch of different tabs. They can view it all in one spot and make the best irrigation decisions.
And coming up after a message from our sponsors, I check in with National Agriculture News.
Agrimiora Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, Agrimiora has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Root Pack R Almond, Grizzly Walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and Platinum Clonal Pistachio Rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, Agrimiora can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Root Pack 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today. Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you. Soil fumigation is a critical step to ensure that your orchard gets off to a good start. Trichlor is a pre-plant soil fumigant and is the foundation for a successful pest management system. Targeted pathogens include soil-borne disease and nematodes. Fumigation helps to create a healthy soil environment that allows the plant's root system to flourish. For more information about Trichlor or to schedule an application, contact Trical Incorporated at 669-327-5076 or visit www.trical.com.
In National Agriculture News here today, the U.S. Department of Agriculture has announced some names of individuals who will hold key staff positions in Washington, D.C. Joaquin Autoro was appointed administrator of the Rural Housing Service within Rural Development. For nearly three decades, Autoro has been dedicated to understanding the heart and passion of minority communities and applying his experience and wisdom to provide financing opportunities that spark economic development. Recently, he served as CEO and executive director for the Wisconsin Housing and Economic Authority. Also named to a key position is Alan Rodriguez. He was appointed as Deputy Press Secretary in the Office of Communications. Rodriguez joins USDA after 4 years of service in a legislative branch. Recently, he served as Deputy Press Secretary to Senator Jeannie Shaheen. Prior to his role as Deputy Press Secretary, Rodriguez worked as a press assistant and staff assistant for Senator Shaheen. Rodriguez is a graduate of Salem State University, where he received a Bachelor of Science in Political Science. And speaking of the Department of Agriculture, they have announced pandemic assistance to cover certification and education expenses to certified organic producers or transitioning to organic. USDA will make $20 million available through the new Organic and Transitional Education and Certification Program. During the COVID-19 pandemic, certified organic and transitional operations faced challenges due to loss of markets and increased costs and labor shortages, in addition to costs related to obtaining or renewing their organic certification, which producers and handlers of conventionally grown commodities do not incur. Certified operations and transitional operations may apply for funding for eligible expenses paid during the 2020, 2021, and 2022 fiscal years. For each year, the program covers 25% of a certified operations eligible certification expenses up to $250 per certification. Crop and livestock operations transitioning to organic production may be eligible for up to 75% of a transitional operations eligible expenses, up to $750 for each year. Sign up for 2020 and 2021 began yesterday. USDA Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack spent some time recently in Glasgow, Scotland at the United Nations Climate Change Conference. During several meetings and other events, he spent time emphasizing the renewed commitment of the U.S. to combating climate change. During a conference call with reporters, the secretary said it's been a productive trip to Scotland.
The president came here and spent 2 days delivering a series of messages about the importance of us being aggressive and forward thinking on climate. He and leaders from the UAE made the announcement of the establishment of the Aim for Climate Initiative, which is a opportunity for America and the UAE to invite the rest of the world, both in terms of countries, in terms of NGOs, in terms of universities and knowledge partners, to join with us and to encourage the private sector to also figure out ways in which they can invest greater resources to accelerate innovation in the climate smart agricultural space.
The coalition of groups and countries dedicated to combating climate change and climate smart ag is growing, with the U.S. right in the middle of it.
Now, we started with a small handful of countries interested in partnering with us on Aim for Climate, but and as a result of the aggressive work of our team at USDA and the team at UAE, we now have over 80 partners, 33 countries, 37 knowledge partners, and we've also been able to identify 8 sprint projects. These are projects where the private sector is investing resources to advance a particular research initiative. There are areas where the private sector is partnering with the Food and Agriculture Foundation, for example, in establishing ways to get to net zero.
And Secretary Vilsack worked to reinforce the message that agriculture is not part of the climate problem, but instead is part of the climate solution.
I think people have been impressed with the extent and degree to which farmers, ranchers, and producers and organizations that represent them are going to be part of the solution. We had an interesting panel discussion to highlight not only the Aim for Climate initiative, but also the Climate Smart Agriculture and Forestry Partnership Initiative.
USDA Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack. A majority of equipment dealers don't support striking John Deere workers, according to a recent poll from Farm Equipment Magazine. The poll found roughly 54% of dealers indicated they do not support the strike, while 37% said they did. 8.5% were not sure. Deere workers have rejected 2 tentative contract agreements since the strike began. UAW members voted to reject the most recent offer, with 55% voting against and 45% voting for the agreement. The results show just 4 of the 12 Deere facilities
cities included, voted against the tentative agreement. Following the vote, a spokesperson for Deere & Company says there will not be a third contract offer to striking union workers. Farm Equipment Magazine reports commentary from dealers who do not support the strike suggested Deere's record profits don't necessarily mean employees should see raises. Dealers that do support the strike accuse Deere of prioritizing its shareholders. U.S. beef exports are on a record pace through September, according to the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Beef exports posted one of the best months on record in September at 123,600 metric tons, up 20% from a year ago, and the fourth largest volume of the post-BSE era. I'm Lori Boyer reporting.
And all farmers these days are interested in improving soil health, but not everyone may know exactly what that means or what it takes. Ag reporter Michael Clements has more.
Dr. Brian Gardner, Ag Spectrum Technical Director, says it's important to know the basics of soil health and how farm management decisions can impact your soil and your yields.
Soil health is simply put the ability to produce marketable outputs with minimal inputs. And it's very important for people to understand that multidimensional property is dynamic. It changes over time and it's dependent on environmental conditions like temperature, moisture, and even the microorganisms and worms and all other life that's present there.
Gardner says soil health goes beyond simply assessing a soil test and deciding your soil needs more nitrogen to be healthier.
Absolutely. There's so much of farm management decisions that impact soil health. Whether you are using a particular input, the rate, the timing, the placement, all of these will affect soil health in that location and how the crop can respond to it.
For farmers, he says, this means optimizing soil health really means maximizing return per bushel or unit produced.
They're going to use certain inputs to stimulate crop growth, but ultimately what they're trying to do is to manage the environmental conditions, the physical, chemical, and biological properties of soils that have to be balanced to determine the productivity of that crop in any given growing year. Choices like herbicides, fertilizer applications, livestock, pasturing, and crop rotation all can affect a soil's ability to produce and support life throughout the growing season.
Gardner says it's important farmers know that each decision they make regarding their crop and their fields can impact soil health.
Well, at Ag Spectrum, we really aim to teach our customers about how different farm management choices affect those different soil properties. By giving them the whys of responses of soils to their choices, they can make better and more profitable choices that improve rather than degrade soil health.
Ag Spectrum's maximum farming system encompasses soil health. Gardner says using a science-based system approach allows farmers to maximize soil health and profitability.
Soil health and plant nutrition are really central to the operation of the system. It includes crop inputs, equipment management, and carbon management all together to lead towards the most desirable outputs, which of course is farm profitability. As I mentioned before, farm management decisions that impact soil health are really about maximizing return on investment.
Visit www.maximumfarming.com to learn more and to contact a local Ag Spectrum representative. Michael Clements reporting.
With Thanksgiving coming up the week after next, I Talk Turkey coming up in a special report with the U.S. Department of Agriculture. We'll talk about why turkey prices are higher this year.
Salty, closed soils can render your crops unproductive. D-Sol, formulated by AgroPlanté, is specially designed for sodic and saline sodic soils. D-Sol will displace sodium and wash it out of the root zone with irrigation to enhance your soil structure, water penetration, and vitality by decreasing soil salinity. AgroPlanté's D-Sol flocculates your soil to promote soil aeration and drainage. With D-Sol, you'll create a better soil environment for your crop roots and optimize yield. Contact AgroPlanté today to find out more at 559-498-0388 or visit us at agroplanté.com.
The California Walnut Board and Commission provides value to the California walnut industry by working together with growers and handlers to advance the industry. Together, the California Walnut Board and Commission are helping to protect, develop, and grow California walnuts domestically and internationally. The California Walnut Board provides funding and strategic direction on walnut production and post-harvest research designed to help support the industry and promote California walnuts. To learn more, visit our website at walnuts.org.
Together we grow.
Tighter supplies and higher prices are the name of the game right now, especially in the agriculture and food sector, and the turkey industry is no exception. Gary Crawford has a special report on why turkey prices will be higher for your Thanksgiving meal.
And now, it says here we are having a special guest, a famous movie director. How are you, sir? What was your name again?
My name is Alfred Hitchcock.
Oh, yes.
And I would like to tell you of our good friends, the birds.
Well, that's nice.
We have honored our feathered friends in many ways.
Does that turkey see it that way?
The turkey is traditionally our guest of honor at Thanksgiving.
Well, I suppose you could see it that way. And Thanksgiving is just about here, almost time to go buy that turkey. Now, we're seeing higher prices these days for almost everything, including food. So this statement about the centerpiece of the Thanksgiving meal, or as Hitch put it, our guest of honor, probably won't be a big surprise.
Consumers are going to be likely paying more for turkey this year than they did last year.
Agriculture Department livestock analyst Shale Shagam, he says turkey producers have been gradually reducing production over the last few years because output was growing faster than demand. And so, this year's stocks of frozen turkey hens as we started November, 17% smaller than last year. And so,
we're seeing these tight supplies leading to higher wholesale prices.
Back at the end of September, wholesale prices, the prices that grocery stores pay, were the highest on record, $1.44 a pound on average, and that's wholesale, remember. However,
the retailer doesn't necessarily fully pass on the higher wholesale prices.
Well, they try not to.
Thanksgiving is obviously a time when there is a lot of featuring of turkeys. They may treat turkeys in some cases as what we refer to as a loss leader, where they will actually sell it for a lower price than they paid for it to encourage people to come into the stores and buy things like stuffing and sweet potatoes and cranberries and the usual fixings that one tends to find at Thanksgiving time.
With that in mind, Shale Shagam has scanned some of the advertised grocery store specials on turkey across the country, and here's what he found.
If we just look at the frozen hen turkey that we track, the featuring price as of the week of the 29th of October through the 4th of November, those stores that are offering featuring are offering it an average price of about $1.15 a pound compared to about 99 cents a pound last year. So we have seen higher prices at retail, even at the featured level, which is reflective of the fact that supplies are tighter and retailers are having to pay more for those turkeys.
Now, we are seeing smaller supplies and higher prices for many products in this country because of so-called supply chain problems and bottlenecks. What about this turkey supply and price situation? Shagam says,
how much of that is reflective of labor issues at various points along the chain, at the ability to move products to market? It's very difficult to find specific instances or points where we're seeing a direct impact on production.
Meanwhile, Shagam says, don't worry, there's not a shortage of turkeys, just a smaller supply, leading to some higher prices. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
And Veterans Day is coming up tomorrow, so I'd like to share some Veterans Day facts from History.com. Veterans Day occurs on November 11th every year in the United States in honor of the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month of 1918 that signaled the end of World War I, known as Armistice Day. In 1954, President Dwight D. Eisenhower officially changed the name of the holiday from Armistice Day to Veterans Day. In 1968, the Uniform Holidays Bill was passed by Congress, which moved the celebration of Veterans Day to the fourth Monday in October. The law went into effect in 1971, but in 1975, President Gerald Ford returned Veterans Day to November 11th due to the important historical significance of the date. Veterans Day commemorates veterans of all wars. And our shout out and thank you to veterans who have served, are serving, and will serve from all of us here at JCS Marketing. And that will wrap up our show for today. If there's a topic you'd like to hear more about, send an email to Sabrina@myaglife.com. This is the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer in for Sabrina Halverson. And from the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.